Well, the times indeed are a change, and we're going to be talking politics a lot this morning in our next hour and during the week in review. But today, this hour, an exhibit honoring the singer-songwriter and the winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature, Bob Dylan, opens tomorrow at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. And it will kick off this museum edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, January 27th. We are going to visit four Wisconsin museums this hour to talk about what they have to offer, and we want to hear about a favorite museum of yours at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We will start with the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. We will also check out a chocolate museum in Burlington, a geology museum in Madison, and of all things, an accordion museum in Superior. Let me welcome our first guest, Erica Pedersen. She is the exhibit curator of Shakespeare's in the Alley, a tribute to Bob Dylan, which will be opening tomorrow at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. Good morning.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So where did this idea come from to celebrate Bob Dylan?
Well, the artist, her name is Skye, she's from Door County, has been working on this collection for about 4 years now. And she brought it to me to take a look at, and I saw it, and I thought it was a really beautiful collection of textiles that she'd put together, and felt like our atrium space at the museum would be a great way to display this, and would be a great way to get people into our atrium and moving around through the space.
It is a beautiful atrium. I have been to your museum just once. I need to go back. But how exactly is Bob Dylan? How is this tribute going to be displayed in art?
Well, text in art has been around for thousands of years, and, you know, this is another way to kind of, you see the words, but they're also kind of a wall of words. Some of these textiles are 27 feet high. That's the largest one that we have. Many of them are 21, 22 feet. So they really kind of hang from two stories high in the air, and you can walk around them and really kind of see them based on their size. They're very kind of awe-inspiring when you see how large they are, and you can be surrounded by the words and read the words.
I get it. So we are going to see these giant displays of the lyrics of some Bob Dylan songs.
Correct.
Oh, very neat. So what songs are we going to be reading about?
Well, there are 18 songs. Now, Skye's full collection is 44 songs, but based on the space, we selected 18 of his best love songs. I was guided by Rolling Stone's top 10 Bob Dylan songs of all time, and I also basically polled everybody that I ran into during the process of this and asked them what their favorite Bob Dylan song was so that I could really kind of hit on everybody's favorite, if possible.
Oh, very cool. Well, you know what? I know we just have a few minutes with you, but we can ask listeners if you have a favorite Bob Dylan song. We'll see if that's in the collection. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. My producer, Brianne Chasso, was asking in the meeting yesterday if we had favorite Bob Dylan songs, and I have to admit I had a hard time picking a favorite. There are so many of them. And I said Blown in the Wind at first, but then I realized as I looked at the list and the Dylan songs that will be on view, that Forever Young is my favorite Bob Dylan song, and I see that just made the cut.
Yes, it did. So it was a late addition because we luckily had a little bit of extra space to squeeze it into. So it's a short song. So
right, and the song I played times they are a change and is certainly in there too. So what do you hope visitors will take away from this?
Well, I think what I kind of want people to look at is, you know, if you hear his songs and recognize them so readily on the radio and when you're playing them, and they're generally very, you know, heard kind of format. But once you can get in and you can read them, you know, there are words that maybe you haven't ever fully read all of the lyrics to, so you can experience them as poetry, as text, and kind of get a full understanding of his writing as well. So it becomes visual, and I think when you read it, you actually start to hear it in your own head because you've heard them a number of times before. So it's a way to kind of experience them on a different level.
Yeah, it's interesting too that you described his writing as poetry, and it's really something that he was awarded the Nobel Prize for literature just recently. And but you say that the artist had started this idea years ago.
Yes. Well, she knew Bob Dylan's work growing up, but it hadn't been ingrained in her at that point. She rediscovered him as an adult, and based on, she'd seen Martin Scorsese's film No Direction Home and was re-inspired to look into his work, and kind of as a meditation went through his catalog and really kind of rediscovered it on a different kind of level as an adult again.
Yeah. So, not that this isn't enough, but is this the extent of the tribute to Bob Dylan?
The Atrium Space is the exhibition on Bob Dylan. We will also be opening additional exhibitions on Saturday as well.
But not Bob Dylan related?
No, not Bob Dylan related. The Atrium installation is the Shakespeare's in the Alley exhibition.
Yeah. Did I read, though, that you were going to be playing some of Bob Dylan's music at some point?
We do. We'll have a musician on Saturday for the opening from 2 to 5, and he'll be doing covers of Bob Dylan, but we're also doing an open mic night program later on during the run of the exhibition on February 23rd in partnership with Café Sorette. So it'll be an open mic night where singers can come in and sign up and cover Bob Dylan or be inspired by Bob Dylan that evening.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So once people finish, looking at Bob Dylan's words, what else should they check out at the Museum of Wisconsin Art?
Well, we're also opening our exhibition, Charles Thwaites, An American Journey, upstairs in the main gallery space. And Charles Thwaites is a Wisconsin painter from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And then we also have downstairs Shane McAdams, the Accidental Landscape, and he's a contemporary painter working in Wisconsin today. And both of them have really beautiful bodies of work to enjoy.
Yeah. Talk a little bit for those who may not be all that familiar with the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. You have been at this new location for, what, a couple of years now?
Oh.
Or more than that.
4 years.
Mm-hmm. And it is a museum that is dedicated to showing Wisconsin artists off.
Yes, we focus solely on the art and artists of Wisconsin, past and present, and we have 5 permanent collection galleries ranging from 19th century art all the way up to modern day, and we have 4 changing exhibition spaces, including the atrium.
Mm-hmm. So what do you hope people take away from their experience at the museum, whenever it may be?
Well, I think Wisconsin has an amazing collection of artists and a really rich art history. And I think it's a great way for people to get in touch with their regional state and identity and, a real pride in the great arts that are produced in the state here.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Erica Pedersen is the exhibit curator of Shakespeare's In the Alley, a tribute to Bob Dylan, which will be opening tomorrow at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. And I did ask for callers talking about maybe their favorite Bob Dylan song while we're in this segment. Jack in Ashland is with us. Hi, Jack.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What is your favorite Bob Dylan song?
Things Have Changed. Do you know that song?
No. Sing it for us.
Times are crazy. People are strange. I'm locked in tight. I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Ah, you know what? I think I have heard that. Thank you, Jack. I'm going to let us go out on The Times They Are A-Changin' by Bob Dylan and let you know that coming up after the news, we are going to continue our tour of different Wisconsin museums and welcome your favorite museum at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're going, I believe, to the Chocolate Museum next.
A chocolate sundae on a Saturday night. What a way to make an evening end bright.
Well, chocolate isn't just for Saturday nights. We are headed to Burlington now to talk about the Chocolate Experience Museum in Burlington. And we are welcoming in this museum edition of Tell Joy Where to Go your favorite museums or fun museums that you have visited or educational museums. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And you know, we do have some callers and emails, so maybe I'll take a couple of those before we actually find out more about the Chocolate Experience Museum. Dan in Drummond has been waiting. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I want to suggest the Drummond Library and Museum because one of the first things you do when you come in, you might meet the Drummond mascot. It's a black lab pup by the name of Banjo.
Oh, really? Oh, how cool. That's worth the visit right there.
And then one of the features you'll see before you come in, on the left-hand side is the original school bell from the very, very first Drummond school.
Neat, Dan. Thank you very much. So this is the Drummond Library and Museum. And and because we're short on time, what's the biggest highlight of that museum?
Well, one of the things is about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the senior class was invited to come in and record background of some of the things that are in the museum itself. On one wall, there is a taxidermy display, and there's other stuff from the history of Drummond and that, being that Drummond is over 100 years old now. Maybe 120-some years old. But it's a very interesting museum.
Thank you very much, Dan. Appreciate it. James on Facebook suggests checking out the Peshtigo Fire Museum. However, he says don't visit during the winter. You have to wait until summer to see it. So apparently it opens for summer hours. I did drive by it, and it was closed one day, and I was going to go there. So I will keep that on my list. There are others that we will get to in just a moment. What about you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is a museum edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. We are exploring, touring some of the great museums in the state of Wisconsin. So let's go to Burlington and check out what we can find at the Chocolate Experience Museum. Our guest is Jan Ludke. She is director of the Chocolate Experience Museum in Burlington and the director of the Chamber of Commerce in Burlington. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why does Burlington have a Chocolate Experience Museum?
Well, actually, Burlington has a museum because we were fortunate enough to have Nestle Foods located in Burlington 50 years ago. And for their 20th anniversary, they suggested doing a chocolate celebration. Well, the city and our local paper and the Chamber of Commerce thought that was a fabulous idea. What better to celebrate? And so although they intended just to do it for their 20th anniversary year, we suggested and continued having a chocolate celebration every year. So it's held Memorial Day weekend, starts on Friday evening, and then goes through Monday.
And can I stay for the entire time?
You absolutely can.
It is actually, I'm very familiar. I have not been there yet, but I'm very familiar with that chocolate festival in Burlington. So that's every Memorial Day weekend, isn't it? Jan, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. And so the museum is a part of this.
The museum was actually established to help preserve some of the creations that were done at the festival. For the first 25 years of our festival, we were fortunate enough to enjoy some fabulous creations that were done by the Nestle employees here in Burlington. Unfortunately, many of them, because of their size and scope, couldn't be fully preserved, but we decided there were some beautiful components that should be saved and preserved, and so that's what we have been doing. So we have any number of those things at the museum, as well as some fabulous solid chocolate sculptures that our largest is over 300 pounds.
Oh, my word. What is it a sculpture of?
It actually was done the year. They have a theme each year, and their theme was peace, love, and chocolate. So it's kind of two little hippies with the peace sign.
Very cool. Does anybody try to take a bite out of your sculptures?
We do recommend that they don't try that. They have been coated with a preservative that keeps the cocoa butter from coming to the top so that they don't get crumbly. So although they are solid chocolate, no, we don't recommend that. But we do have some chocolate samples for anyone who stops by.
Oh, good. What other activities are available at the museum besides seeing these huge and or other chocolate artifacts?
Well, we have a DVD of the first of all the various creations that have been made through the years. So you can see, you know, the 9-foot Statue of Liberty and the 17-foot Chocolate Fall and Nestle Park and some of the other things that they've made through the years, including the world's largest Crunch Bar, which is in the Guinness Book of World Records. We also have some interactive pieces. We have video of the history of chocolate. And some very knowledgeable people to help you enjoy the museum on hand.
Very nice. And chocolate samples to eat. To talk a little bit more about Burlington's role in chocolate history.
Well, as I said, Nestle's, we were fortunate. In 1966, Nestle's built their plant here in town. And so they have been a fabulous employer here through the years. They run 24/7. They make the mini crunch bars and the 100 grand bars and goobers and raisinettes. And, you know, if you're going to have any kind of smell in the air, chocolate is the smell you want to have. So when you look into our office, you definitely know there's chocolate around.
Oh, my gosh. You had me at raisinettes. I don't know why. Those are now my favorite. So what do you hope people take away from the Chocolate Experience Museum when they visit?
Well, I hope that they're a little more knowledgeable about the history of chocolate, about Burlington's role, and that they might consider coming back for some of our other chocolate-related events, not just Chocolate Fest, which is the largest festival, but this year we have a brand new one. It's called Hot Chocolate Fest, and it's going to be coming up in February 10th, 11th, and 12th. It's going to be pond hockey and open ice skating and a hot chocolate contest and a chili contest. So that's going to be a lot of fun. That's a brand new event. And then for a number of years, we've also had a chocolate extravaganza, which happens in March, along with our home show. And that is people bring in chocolate items that are baked, and there's a judging, and of course some sampling. So that's a lot of fun.
We are going to have to do multiple shows on all of these festivals. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for coming to Burlington.
Jan Ludke is the director of the Chocolate Experience Museum in Burlington and the director for the Chamber of Commerce in Burlington. This is a museum edition of Tell Joy Where to Go, and I'd like to know if you have a favorite museum. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let us know if you have, maybe it's a well-known museum in your community, or maybe it's something that's a little bit off the beaten track, something a little bit unusual. Michael on Facebook is suggesting the Fort Crawford Museum in Prairie du Chien, which explores the history of the fort and Villa Louis, and it allows people to experience Victorian life. All right, thank you. Lisa emails, one of my favorite Wisconsin museums is Castle Rock Museum in Alma. This privately owned museum is a collection of medieval weaponry. Oh, my goodness. My 10-year-old son loves visiting it. It's only open on Fridays and Saturdays. The collection is quite impressive. I would encourage anyone who likes the medieval era or antique weapons to check it out. The Castle Rock Museum. And Steve in Montreal is with us. Hi, Steve.
Well, good morning, Joy.
Morning.
This is Steve up here in snowy and cold, 21 degrees, Montreal. I want to put a word in for Little Finland.
Okay, where is that now?
Little Finland is on US 2, about 2 miles west of Hurley. We've got a beautiful site there. We have 3 restored outbuildings that are correct to the era, and shows how not only the Finlanders, but anybody that came up here got a chance to buy a piece of property and own it themselves, how people lived. You know, if you got off the boat from somewhere and you couldn't speak English, there were only 2 jobs open to you. You could swing an axe in the woods,
yeah,
or a pick in the mine.
We'll check out Little Finland near Hurley. Thanks very much, Steve, for that recommendation. I am a rock. I am an island. Well, you will learn all about rocks and much more at a museum in Madison. Our next guest is Richard Slaughter, the director of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Geology Museum. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. I have had so many people tell me that I've got to visit the Geology Museum on the UW-Madison campus, that it is just awesome. And I have been here for decades, and I haven't been there yet. So don't yell at me. Tell me why I should go.
Well, I think, first of all, you're getting very good advice.
Right.
And secondly, you know, we are a small museum, but we are packed with geological treasures. And including, we're home to a nearly 40-foot-long dinosaur skeleton.
Wow.
We have a gallery of minerals of almost every color and shape, prisms and cubes. We have jellyfish fossils, gemstones, a saber-toothed cat, and the list goes on and on. Mammoth fur, gold nuggets.
Oh, my word.
Fossil poop. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
Then you got to go just for that. Are these all artifacts found in Wisconsin or all over the country and world?
Well, we have a healthy share of them from Wisconsin, but this is a collection that's been built up over 100 years by geologists in our department and donors, and so we have specimens from around the world and even beyond. We have specimens that are from hundreds of millions of miles away.
Wow. So what can we learn, though, about Wisconsin geology at the museum?
Well, you can learn about the role geology played in the history and founding of our state. You know, we are the Badger State for a reason, because of this rich geological history. The miners at the time were known as Badgers. But we have fossils from when Wisconsin was submerged beneath a tropical sea. So we have corals and spiny trilobites. But then we also have fossils of mastodons and giant beavers from when the state was largely covered beneath glaciers. And so you can learn about these different chapters of Wisconsin history.
This is amazing. I really do. I promise I'm going to be there very, very soon. Is this free, open all the time? Do you have special hours?
Well, we are free. That's my favorite price.
Yep.
And so it doesn't cost anything to get there. And we're open throughout the week, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, and then on Saturdays from 9 until 1. And on Saturdays, what's nice, so long as it's not a football Saturday, there is a lot right behind the museum that is, you know, free and open for parking.
And the this museum has been around since Wisconsin, maybe even before Wisconsin was a state, the year of statehood, 1848.
That's right. We were established in October of 1848. So at the very first Board of Regents meeting, where the university was more or less established, one of the action items from that meeting was this new state with this new university needed a geology collection. And so we have been kicking around on campus ever since.
Wow. So there is, tell me about this new, one of the newer exhibits having to do with copper.
Sure. Earlier this month, our curator put together a collection of copper minerals that are now on display. And the thing about copper minerals are they are strikingly blue and green. And so it's a collection of blue and green minerals, although not all of them. There are some forms of copper mineral that are also red, but it's a nice, very colorful cluster.
Beautiful. And I can see a piece of Mars there?
That is right. In fact, we are the only place in Wisconsin where if you are dying to see a piece of another planet, we're the place where you can do that.
Oh, my goodness.
So for a few years now, we've had it on display, but it is probably my favorite recent addition to our exhibits is this piece of Mars.
Is it red?
It is not. It is actually, the inside is fairly gray, and the outside is blackened.
Wow. And there are other rocks from space that people can touch?
That is right. Just outside my office window, there is a 320-pound chunk of iron from outer space. It landed in Arizona about 50,000 years ago and left a crater almost a mile across. And, you know, people can touch it. And when they are touching that meteorite, if you come to the museum, Joy, and touch that meteorite, you'll be touching the oldest thing you'll ever touch.
I'm there. So what do you hope visitors take away after visiting the Geology Museum?
Let's see. Well, I hope they take away questions, and that's what we're about, you know, and all museums for that matter. It is about curiosity, stoking those flames of curiosity. And so I hope when people look at our exhibits, there's plenty to learn, but in a way I hope they walk away, almost unsatisfied to the extent that they don't have all their questions answered, because we would never be able to achieve that. And I hope they walk away with more questions, which then encourage them to keep on learning even when they're outside our doors.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Joy.
Richard Slaughter is the director of the University of Wisconsin-Madison Geology Museum. We will continue our tour of different Wisconsin museums after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next, we're going to go to Superior and visit an accordion museum. And we'll continue to take your favorite museums to at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, Well, we have been touring some really great and fun museums in Wisconsin during this museum edition of Tell Joy Where to Go. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Our next stop is an accordion museum in Superior. So far, we have learned about the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend and its new tribute to Bob Dylan, an exhibit that opens tomorrow. We went to the Delicious Chocolate Museum in Burlington. We just visited the Geology Museum at UW-Madison, and you have been sharing all of your favorite museums too. We still have an open line for you and time for you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What's a fun or fascinating museum in your neck of the woods? Angela in Partyville is with us. Hi, Angela.
Good morning. I would like to recommend the Indian Agent House in Portage, Wisconsin.
Yes, and what is that all about?
So there's the actual house that the Indian Agent lived in, and what him and his family moved up from Chicago to live here, and then he was the agent between the U.S. government and the Native American Indians. So you not only get to learn about that, how that functioned, that system, you also get to see their home and how they lived in that time period.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. I didn't even know that was there. So that's in Portage.
Portage, Wisconsin, yes. And then another interesting aspect about it is that that Indian agent's granddaughter, I believe, was the founder of Girl Scouts.
Well, is that ever cool? That's great. By the way, we're going to be talking about Girl Scout cookies coming up next week, Tuesday from 6 until 7, because this year is the 100th year anniversary of the Girl Scout cookie. But thank you for your recommendation for the Indian Agent House in Portage. We have Neil on Facebook who says that we should all check out Elmer's Auto and Toy Museum near Fountain City. It overlooks the Mississippi River. It has an amazing collection of pedal cars, auto-related toy cars and trucks, and more than 100 antique and muscle cars. There we go. It's open select weekends between May and October. Well, who knew, huh? Well, who knew that there was an accordion museum in Superior? We are headed to Superior next to learn about this. Let me welcome our next guest. Helmi Harrington is the curator of a World of Accordions Museum in Superior. Good morning.
Good morning, and I'm glad to be with you today.
Thank you for joining us. Well, first of all, I guess, what do we see if we go to the World of Accordions Museum in Superior? How many accordions and related instruments call your museum home?
Oh, thank you. It's a feast for the eyes. We have 1,300 accordions on display and thousands of artifacts, a million pieces of music, and a wonderful concert series. So there are many things to enjoy in this location.
How in the world did Superior, Wisconsin become home to this museum?
Well, it's a wonderful building that houses and serves our purposes so very well. But I began the museum 25 years ago, and it has grown very rapidly and very well. We're the best in the world.
And maybe the only in the world?
Not the only in the world, but certainly the best.
Well, you must certainly have a great appreciation for accordions to start this up. What do accordions mean to you?
Of course, they are my lifestyle. I've played since I was a child. I made a living with it for the entirety of my life as well as now. But the best part is that it has grown from just being a performer to being a scholar in the categorization of the instruments and their complex cultural histories.
Well, so to talk a little bit about, this is a broad question, but how have accordions contributed to cultures around the world?
For every culture, the instrument has been one of the principal distributors of mores, body rhythms, song texts and philosophies, and traditions from one generation to the other. And that is a strong influence in America today.
I always think of accordions when I think of polka music, but they are associated with a lot more than that, aren't they?
Absolutely. In our next slate of activities in May, we will have international artists at the museum site, which has a fabulously perfect acoustic auditorium. We'll have people from Canada and Russia and noteworthy individuals from around the United States as well.
And you also train people about how to repair accordions. So tell us about that.
That's actually how the museum got started. I taught the technical college program at Red Wing for accordion repair and saw that the commons area displays were much more attractive to everyone who walked into the building. And when they closed my department in 94, I opened my own repair technician school. We had lots of people in line. Mm-hmm. And the museum collection continued to draw more attention. And then we outgrew the building that we had in Duluth and moved to Superior. And now we have certainly not only regional but national and international recognitions.
Very nice. Is the accordion as vibrant today as it has always been, or is it an instrument that is becoming a little less common?
No, I think we have a natural groundswell of interest in accordion playing and in the music that it makes, because many people are attracted through polkas and waltzes and the ethnicities, but we have such well-trained and very fine artist accordionists that carry the caliber of a Horowitz on the instrument and the repertory that applies as well. So the music is very different, and the players have advanced tremendously.
Besides your special event, do people hear accordion music, or do you just see the accordions in the museum?
You can hear accordion music at any time. But by the way, you might also notice that there's a great increase in accordions on the television commercials and so forth. And some of the people who are those participants are also on our board of directors. You can hear music when you travel through the museum, and very often I will do a demo of the principal types of accordions and their favorite music.
Wonderful. So as we wrap up, what do you hope people take away from a visit to a World of Accordions museum?
An enhanced love and appreciation of the instrument and all that it brings to our life today as well as in the past.
Are you open daily or seasonally?
We're open year-round, but on Saturday, Sunday, Monday only for conventional tours. Special events are also arrangeable, but mostly it's a 10 to 2 time frame.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Helmi Harrington is the curator of a World of Accordions Museum in Superior. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life, and here is executive producer Erica Janik.
Wisconsin winters are known for being cold and harsh. But John Gerda reminds us of the 19th century settlers who toughed it out on the edge of the world.
Wisconsin winters can seem endless. Even if we were born here, even if the season is relatively mild, by January we forget that the air was ever warm, that the world outside our windows was ever green. The fact is that we've got it easy. Imagine, if you can, what winter was like for Milwaukee's pioneers. Lake Michigan was their major lifeline to the outside world. When ice brought shipping to a halt every November, Milwaukee was beyond the reach of civilization until the following April. News was scarce, mail service was painfully slow, and the settlers had only each other to stare at for the next 4 or 5 months. The long freeze required as much preparation as a polar expedition. In 1836, Albert Fowler listed the provisions he had put aside before the last ship left in November. 4 barrels of flour, 100 pounds of butter, a barrel of crackers, a barrel of beef, and a large supply of potatoes, carrots, and other vegetables. A monotonous diet was not the only drawback of a frontier winter. Most of the early settlers were young men on the make, and months of enforced idleness must have been maddening. There were precious few distractions of any kind. No smartphones, no computers, not even a public library. It was probably a pioneer who coined the term cabin fever. There were compensations. Some settlers kept their hands in one of the euchre games always in progress at local hotels. Some used the time to dig into the latest James Fenimore Cooper novel. Despite the presence of a strong temperance faction, most drank. Pioneer historian James Buck counted more than 100 rum holes in Frontier, Milwaukee, each offering its own brand of warmth and dissipation. Heart of Your Soul spent much of the season on the ice. Most of Milwaukee's present downtown was a marsh, and it provided excellent ice skating. Benjamin Miller, an 1839 arrival, recalled the central wetlands as a winter wonderland. "I had put on my skates at the corner of Wisconsin and Van Buren Streets," Miller recalled in 1898, "and skated from there south to the old harbor mouth. That's a distance of nearly 2 miles. A pair of New Yorkers, Elisha and Benjamin Edgerton, favored indoor entertainment. In 1836, despite a critical shortage of women, they paid a Chicago fiddler named Joe Davlin $150 to play a series of winter cotillion parties. Davlin liked Milwaukee so much that he settled there, and Elisha Edgerton pronounced the cotillions a great success. Navigation never resumed before the end of March, and the ice sometimes lasted into early May. By that time, Milwaukeeans must have felt as isolated as astronauts on the International Space Station. They were ready for new faces, new goods, newer news. The first ship of the season brought all that and more. It meant the resumption of life. We have largely conquered the season. Moving from home to car to work or school, we travel from one artificial hothouse to another. But we, too, feel the ancient hunger for real warmth and real light in the depths of winter. Take heart. The days lengthen.
John Gerda is an award-winning historian and author. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
Thank you, Erica, and thanks to Brianne Shasso for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.